You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I am Allison Twitter from MLB.com, and just looking at the West Division as a whole, it looks like the Dodgers are in a pretty good position to be able to hold off the Giants and possibly win this division. Of course, there are still plenty of games left, but looking at the Dodgers' schedule, they have 19 games remaining of their 28 after entering this weekend against teams that are below 500, and only 9 games with teams above 500, the teams being the Nats and the Giants. So 6 more games with the Giants, anything can happen, but it looks like the Dodgers have a pretty good hold as they get into the stretch run. I am here with my colleague, Ken Gernick, who covers the Dodgers for MLB.com, and the first place Dodgers. So it appears that they're doing a pretty good job of trying to hold off the Giants. So it'll be interesting to see what happens between now and the end of the season. They have 6 more games with the Giants, but overall, they have 19 games against teams below 500 and only 9 games against teams above 500. So things are looking pretty good for them. Ken, let's bring you into this conversation. I actually wanted to ask you, just as a veteran reporter, your opinion on this, because Clayton Kershaw's name has come up a little bit in National League MVP talk. And I was wondering, where do you stand on this for a pitcher getting consideration to maybe win the MVP? Should they even be in the running? They have their own award. Where do you stand on that?
Well, not having a vote, I don't know. I don't know really whether my opinion matters much to the voters, but
I think a starting pitcher,
you know, is deserving in certain cases, and I think this would be one of them. I think that you see a guy here who doesn't just put up numbers, but he's a leader for the team. He sets an example. Respect is throughout the clubhouse. So I think when you start factoring in the intangibles, it elevates a starting pitcher, and it kind of combats some of the arguments against them. The biggest one is that 4 days out of 5, he doesn't do anything to help them win, and I think in a case like Kershaw, that's just not true. So I tend to put a lot of stock in what his manager, Don Mattingly, said. Here's a former MVP who used to think that that the MVP should only be for position players because pitchers have their own award. But he said that he's changed his mind after seeing the impact that a guy like Kershaw has on his entire team day after day.
Yeah, I think that I would tend to agree with that. If it's just an absolute domination, and Kershaw clearly 15-3, 182 ERA. So it's just interesting, Bob Gibson being the last National League pitcher to win the MVP, and that was like 46 years ago. And it made Major League Baseball decide to lower the mound because he was too dominant. So
right.
I don't know. I kind of go back and forth on it, but I think that when you have something like the performance that Kershaw has this year, I don't know if you can really overlook him. But anyway, moving on to Jock Peterson. So a lot of the teams that have these top prospects, and they're not really going to be September call-ups mainly because they don't have to put them on the roster, and so they're not going to protect them this winter. But this, I guess in Peterson's situation, it's a different story, and they've already confirmed that they're going to call him up just to kind of acclimate him to the big leagues and just get some experience. So, what was the Dodgers thinking on that?
Well, they haven't really talked to a whole lot about it, but all indications are that that's what they'll do. And as you said, it's mainly just to get him acclimated. They're not looking for him to carry them to the promised land. You know, they've got enough outfielders. They get too many outfielders. So, and he still has things to learn. He's not a polished, finished product yet anyway. So they'll bring him up like they usually bring up rookies at the very end who they haven't used during the season. And just to give him a taste, you know, maybe let him get into games when it doesn't matter if they need a pinch runner or defensive replacement. They need to give somebody a day off. But he will be like a lot of September call-ups. He'll be sitting at the end of the bench and taking up some room in the clubhouse and just getting a feel for things. But they're not looking at him to make an impact.
And when it comes to just to the contending teams, and that's sort of the conundrum for a general manager when they're trying to decide who to call up and how many guys. I mean, when it's a non-contending team, they have guys they want to look at, give some other, you know, relief pitchers a break here and there, and it doesn't really matter if it's a little bit too crowded of a clubhouse. You're not upsetting any chemistry, any dynamic that's been going on all season. But when it comes to contenders, there is really a fine line between, you know, wanting to get some reinforcements and not wanting to overdo it where it's disruptive. Do you think that that's like a kind of a tough thing for a general manager this time of year when he has a team that's headed for the playoffs?
I think it's a tougher thing for the manager, you know, and the general manager wants, maybe unlike the manager, he's looking ahead a little bit, and he would like to see how he reacts to certain game situations because he's got to make a decision. And in the Dodgers' case, they need to make a decision whether they trade any of their veteran outfielders, one of them, two of them. Do they hand the job to Peterson in spring training or not? Do they make him compete for one? So the Dodgers do have kind of this overriding outfield question kind of hanging over their heads. And it's not the priority right now. The priority is this season and getting to the World Series. And if he can help them in that case, they'll use him. I think the use will be limited. But on the other hand, in the back of their mind, I'm sure they would like to see him in certain game situations because they are facing some off-season decisions with their outfielders.
Do you have any other indications about some other prospects that might be getting a September call-up?
Well, they'll probably bring up some of the guys that that they've called up during the year, an extra infielder, maybe Triunfal. I would imagine a third catcher in Fedorovich. But those would be the type of September call-ups that any team would do, especially a team in the race, to give you a little more flexibility when rosters expand. Maybe a reliever like Yimi Garcia, who's pitched well in the last few weeks as the new closer. The Dodgers have some question marks on their bullpen. But they're not going to bring up 15 guys. They don't have the room and they don't have the need. So I would guess somewhere maybe in the 4 or 5 number. And while Peterson will probably be the biggest name, he might not have the biggest impact. It's very possible that a guy like Garcia, who really isn't on a lot of radars, might play a bigger role down the stretch than a guy like Jock Peterson, just because they've got enough outfielders, but they don't have enough relief pitchers.
And I feel like I have to discuss the health of the rotation. I feel like we do this every week, but so we don't break with tradition, we can kind of end on this. Beckett probably not returning this season now for sure, but just how is the overall health of the rest of the rotation and how are guys sort of muddling along with that?
Well, Ryu's about to throw a simulated game, and it figures that he might return to the rotation Sunday or Monday if it goes well. So they're getting healthier. His return would allow them to put Kevin Correa in the bullpen for long relief, and it would just lengthen everything out. So Ryu is obviously a big piece. He's their number 3 starter. They've gotten by without him for these 2 weeks without really losing any ground. In fact, they've actually gained ground. Roberto Hernandez has done a good job in Josh Beckett's spot. He's not Kershaw, but he keeps him in the game. He's won a couple games, had 3 quality starts. And that's really, you know, out of a 5th or 6th starter, that's really all you can ask for. So they're happy with that acquisition. It got him through this tough stretch. As you pointed out, their schedule appears to be getting soft, playing a lot of teams with losing records. So they're cautiously optimistic that they've kind of weathered the storm here. And if they can just kind of maintain their lead and maintain their quality of play, they should make the postseason. I think that's what they think. They don't talk that way, but I think that's the feeling.
Yeah, getting this late in the year, having a 4, 5, 6 game lead in the division is a pretty good indication that, barring a complete disaster, that they're probably going to make it to October. So, Ken, thank you so much, and we'll be checking in with you next week. Appreciate it. I'm joined by my colleague, Chris Haft, who covers the Giants beat for MLB.com, and the big news, really the only news going on with the Giants, well, besides the fact that they're fighting for a what looks to be a wild card spot at this point, even though the division is still somewhat within reach. The big news is, of course, Tim Lincecum and the Giants trying to figure out what to do with him. And at this point, what they're figuring out to do with him is to put him in the bullpen and see if he can sort of get himself straightened out. So let's bring in Chris Haft. Chris, let's talk a little bit about that. They bumped Lincecum from the rotation, and instead of starting Thursday, he'll work out of the bullpen. So what is going on with that? And is this going to be sort of an experimental time? And do they know ultimately where he's going to end up?
Allison, I think they'd like to see him back in the starting rotation. Not obviously. I mean, it's beyond a question, beyond a shadow of a doubt. They'd love to see him back in rotation, pitching as he did earlier in the year when he won four straight starts, a stretch that was kicked off by his no-hitter against the Padres. I mean, he looked like he had succeeded in that his little transition from power pitcher to finesse pitcher. But he apparently has his mechanics have gotten a little scrambled since then, and lately they've just not been good at all. And so what they've done is put him in, moved him out of rotation, not necessarily even put him in the bullpen. I mean, I don't think they trust him with a relief appearance right now, unless it was a lopsided thing. They want to see if he can get his mechanics back and before he even put him in the game from here on out. So you mentioned experimental. It's for him personally, it's very much an experimental time.
And it's just got to be so frustrating for everybody. I mean, I was saying, besides Lincecum, who obviously I'm sure is just beside himself with all of this, but it's just been such a – it just seems like, you know, I mean, a couple of years ago he was pitching out of the bullpen throughout the postseason. And then, you know, people were kind of wondering what was going on with him there, what's his future going to be, and then he'll just, like, throw a no-hitter. it makes no sense. But since the All-Star break, 8 games, 7 starts, 1-4 record, and 8.07 ERA. So – I mean, do you think that the frustration is getting to him? Do you think that that's taken its toll? Is that kind of adding to this whole thing?
I think it's, all of the above. It's taken its toll. It's added to, it's exacerbated the problem. I don't think it's irreversible, but his delivery is a set of moving parts. Partly because he is a smallish type of guy, as everybody knows, and he's got to have his mechanics working. Everything's got to be right and synchronized, with his delivery for it to produce pitches that, not to sound too much like a physics professor, but impart the necessary, force upon his pitches. And if one little thing's off, it can just throw off the whole thing. So, that's what he's trying to get back in the bullpen. I think he does have he's dealt with adversity a lot, even on a major league level. He's had entire months where he's pitched poorly, and then came back to pitch very effectively the following month. They're hoping he can do this sort of thing again.
So I have to talk to you a little bit about this recent series in Chicago, when that was one of the more interesting couple of days I think that anybody's had. Having covered many, many games at Wrigley Field, I know what it's like when that rain starts. And sometimes it just feels like it's going sideways right into the press box, and you feel like you're just in the middle of basically a hurricane, and it can just come on just like that. So just over those couple days, can you kind of describe what that was like? I mean, they protested the game. That protest ended up getting held up. They essentially played a doubleheader to finish the game that was called when it shouldn't have been because the grounds crew seemed to not be able to get the tarp on time. And so what was that whole thing just like, waiting 4.5 hours for them to basically call the game, and you feel like you're just stuck at Wrigley Field for days at a time? I know how that feels.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been so bad if there are worse places to be stuck at, but we weren't in the outfield seats drinking beer or anything. So
right.
The sheets of rain you described, we only saw that for brief periods. I mean, right before they called the game, there was only a little bit of rain, but when you saw the grounds crew start out by putting down the tarp incorrectly, you got the sense that something was going to go wrong. I mean, we couldn't have predicted the entire chain of events, but step one is getting the tarp down correctly. That's just the way it is at any park with any grounds crew. And the fact they didn't do that Well, when they removed, when it came time to remove the tarp, they ended up inadvertently soaking second base, the second base area where a second baseman would play and where a shortstop would play. And it just looked like melted chocolate ice cream, the infield did. So then you really, that increased the sense, you know, because we're watching all this, you know, that things weren't going to go well. And then when, you know, Bruce Bochy, a couple of Giants coaches, one or two Cubs people, and the umps would, you know, pace the area, they didn't like how soft it was, and it was going to be too risky for the infielders, you know, risking injury. So, but the whole thing was just, it just seemed like it took more time than needed to, and can't say it was bizarre. It was frustrating for all onlookers.
I can imagine. So it was part of the problem that, that torrential downpour is not supposed to happen. So it's supposed to be a light rain. And then it starts, and I guess that the umpire has to signal for the ground crew to come out and bring out the tarp. Is that what part of the problem was, that he just didn't act quickly enough?
That was part of the problem. They defended, the umps defended themselves. I believe Hunter Wendelstedt was a crew chief. He pointed out that the local radar, didn't show any storm, the big heavy storms in the area. And so they didn't know that this little 10-minute downpour was going to occur. That was part of the problem. So the people were not at alert as they should have been. So it was just a combination of, as Hunter Wendelstedt himself, in fairness, did say, it was just a combination of unfortunate events.
I guess I could call it the perfect storm. Ha, ha, ha. moving on, that's my small attempt at humor. Moving on, so Buster Posey possibly moving to first base, this seems to be a yearly discussion, which is what happens when you have a catcher who may have had a couple of injury issues in the past and you're trying to get some longevity out of him. There seems to be no plans to do that now, but you did mention some facts that could possibly sway them down the road. He actually does perform better at first base, offensively, but he's only had like 22 games there. But he does have a .385 average when he's playing first base. But what do you think? You know, just looking down the road, you think that they will eventually decide to move him?
I think they'll kind of ease into it, Allison. You covered a guy, and I covered the same guy at the beginning of his career. I covered him when he started making the transition. That would be Craig Biggio. You got to witness what the fruits of his, you know, the fruits of you know, the switch were, you know, the long-term effect and effectiveness of the switch. I was there when he made the switch, and at first he did it kicking and screaming. He didn't want to, his identity was as a catcher. He didn't want to move. It ended up being the best thing for him. Buster is very much the same way. He feels his identity is as a catcher. He feels he is most effective to the organization, as most valuable to the organization as a catcher. He's probably right. But, you know, they also, again, as you point out, they want to get some longevity out of him, increase production. So they've got, and they, moreover, they have some decent catching prospects. Andrew Susak, and when he's healthy, this year he's been plagued by concussions, with Hector Sanchez, a switch hitter. So, you know, they have some alternatives there behind the plate. It's a combination of circumstances they're going to have to iron out. I think eventually we might see Buster play maybe first base more and more, you know, just a little more gradually by the year in the next few years. And then, you know, finally when Susak, they think Susak's completely ready to play regularly, or Hector Sanchez, you know, maybe they go with a three catcher alignment. It's going to be it'll be interesting to see what they do. I don't really have a good answer right now, but a lot may weigh on whether Pablo Sandoval sticks around. He's up for free agency at the end of the year. If they need to find somebody to play third base, well, Buster's been mentioned as a possibility. I don't think that's a position he would or wants to play, but he's more cut out for first base, but. They say catchers can pretty much, you know, they're so nimble, even though they get a, you know, bad rep as being out of shape and all that, thick, fat, whatever. most catchers are capable of playing in field and outfield positions, usually corner spots. So if they had to put Buster at third base, maybe they could do it short term.
Wow, that's interesting. I've never heard of third base. And I guess half
I don't
the
think
game.
It's, I don't think it's very likely, but it's been thrown out there as an idea.
And they have to also convince the player, like Buster would have, not that he gets the final say, but he needs to be a willing participant in this whole thing. I know that is kind of an uphill battle a lot with organizations when they're trying to do something like this.
Well, there you go. So until it gets to the point where they ask Buster and it becomes public, it's all speculation. Nobody knows for sure. But I think all signs point to him not being a regular everyday catcher in the future. I know there's a lot of qualifiers in that statement, but I just don't see him. I just don't see him playing 140 games behind a plate 10 years or more, like Johnny Bench or something.
Yeah, it takes a special kind of guy, and it takes a lot of luck to avoid injuries. And they don't come along that often. It always amazed me that Brad Ausmus did not spend a day on the DL until his final season, his 18th season in the big leagues. And most catchers that you see, former catchers, you see them walking around now as managers, coaches, broadcasters. You know, the guys in their 50s and 60s, and they can barely walk because they've had like 12 knee surgeries.
Yeah.
Anyway, one last question. This Joe Panic thing. So his last name, you know, I'm sure everybody's making jokes about Panic with a K, Panic with a C. Is everybody trying to do a play on words with him, and is it getting old and annoying for an everyday reporter like yourself?
Believe it or not, there's been an almost complete absence of puns.
Oh,
I know it may come as a surprise, but I made a promise to myself I wouldn't use it in print, but I actually did once, but I'm not going to do it again, probably. I mean, I just wanted to point, it was after he had a 3 or 4 hit game, and I just basically want to point out that this guy does not panic. You know, I mean, he's a rookie, but he's extremely cool, extremely level-headed, and he just may end up being their second baseman of the future.
Yeah, I guess if he was just like a complete bust, then all the headlines would be like, everybody panic! And but I guess you can't do that when the guy's playing well, so, which is good. I'm happy for him. So with that, I will sadly let you go. But we will catch up with you next week, and I appreciate your time, Chris. Thank you. And I am joined by my colleague, Corey Brock, who covers the Padres for MLB.com. And it is time to look at some of these teams that are not contending for postseason berths. It's time to look toward September call-ups, toward 2015. And so the Padres have some interesting choices of guys that they can call up, as is the case with a lot of teams. Some of the really good names that fans are really excited about aren't going to come up basically because of roster management, and they don't have to be protected on the 40-man roster this winter for the Rule 5 draft, which means they're not going to be placed on the 40-man roster. So with that being said, Corey, let's talk about some of these other guys. I mean, Matt Whistler falls into that top prospect who probably is not going to get called up. But you listed in some of your coverage some of the other players who could possibly see a call-up. Could you kind of expound on some of those guys?
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Whistler at the top, Allison. I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, we're going to see this guy before too long. In spring training, I think he probably has a very good chance of cracking the Padres' rotation in the very near future. He's just reaching kind of his innings limit, or, you know, I don't think there's a hard number, but, you know, he's a 21-year-old in the Pacific Coast League who, you know, has taken his lumps at times. And, you know, I just think, you know, he doesn't need to go on the 40-man roster. It's just a good time for them to let, you know, for the organization to kind of shut him down and maybe get a look at some other guys that we'll see in September, a few people we've seen before, Robbie Erlund, Joe Whelan, the guy that had Tommy John surgery a couple years ago. An interesting guy, R.J. Alvarez, who was one of the top guys they received back from the Angels in the Houston Street deal. He's a reliever that's with AA San Antonio. I think they want to get a look at him. Now, he doesn't have to go on the 40-man roster either. However, I think they view him as a guy that he could potentially impact their bullpen in 2015. So I think they want to get, you know, lay eyes on him as much as possible in September and kind of use that as an evaluation period. And, you know, it's always interesting how teams handle that roster expansion. And certainly whether you're in a race or whether you're not has a lot to do with how many players you add and how you handle these players. And, you know, for the Padres, they'll add far more arms than they will position players. And they'll use these pitchers to kind of, for reinforcements, for lack of a better term, to kind of give a guys a little bit of a break, guys that have been going hard since April. You know, we talk about the Padres' bullpen, at least statistically, has been the probably the second-best bullpen in all of baseball this year behind the Mariners. And these guys have been going at it pretty hard, a lot of appearances, a lot of innings. So, you know, and so this will serve a dual purpose. It'll lessen the workload for some guys and also give them a chance to evaluate some of these guys, not just for the coaching staff, but for the new general manager, A.J. Preller, give them something to go on for next year.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you have a contending team, there's always that fine line of how many guys do you want to bring up. I mean, there's always a couple bullpen guys that will come just to preserve some arms and give some of the relievers a little bit of a break. But you don't want to bring up too many guys to sort of disrupt the chemistry and the dynamic that's been going on all season when you're trying to get to the playoffs. But I guess that really doesn't apply, except for I just found like my years of covering the Astros, there always seemed to be a Cubs road trip or a Dodgers road trip right after the call-ups with the two tiniest visiting clubhouses in baseball and having all these guys kind of smushed in there. But other than that, I guess it's really kind of there are no drawbacks to having maybe too many guys come up.
Well, yeah, and that's funny you mentioned that, Alice. I remember we were in Los Angeles, and they've since redone the visiting clubhouse, but you remember how small the clubhouse was, the visiting clubhouse at Dodger
yes.
Stadium. And in the middle of the clubhouse for the roster expansion, they essentially set up these they look like milk cartons, for lack of a better term, the metal grated ones, and they put some masking tape around the bottom of it to kind of divide them off as to, okay, this is my side, this is your side. And sure enough, that's where the rookies had to dress. Essentially in the middle of the room, they removed a couch, and, you know, we're going to squeeze you in here, and this is kind of the auxiliary locker room. You could just stand here and get dressed in front of everyone else, but yeah, it's kind of funny. And then, you touched upon it a little bit there, you know, with these contending teams too, Allison, and maybe, you know, as you do these podcasts with teams that that are actually in races, you kind of walk that fine line too where, you know, you bring up these players and give your everyday guys a little bit of a rest, you know, and then you get into those final weeks of the season, like how much rest do you give them? When do you need to start easing those guys back into the lineup so they're fresh for the playoffs? That's kind of a weird fine line, too, and you end up reading about that, you know, as these teams go in the playoffs and maybe they start slow and it's like, well, shoot, these guys should have been playing a little bit more, so it's like you can't really win.
Yeah, right, because you're either overusing them or you're getting them out of their rhythm, and I do not envy I never envy general managers, but I especially do not in September when they're trying to figure out how to, you know, what to do in those situations. So I was looking at, not that I'm poking fun at this, but I thought, well, maybe this is one of the reasons why the Padres are not so much in contention. They have a lot of active outfielders, but one really everyday starter in Seth Smith. And so there's a whole bunch of guys that are auditioning for playing time, which would be a little problematic if you're sort of going into a season with that situation. But now that it's wearing down, do you see that sort of being able to take shape in September and they'll have some more answers by the time the season's over?
Well, you know, and Carlos Quinton, he's done for the rest of the year with
right.
the bone bruise in his left knee. So that clears things up just a little bit. But, yet you still have a few guys that you need to – you have to find some spots for these guys. Will Venable needs to play. He's under contract for next year. Seth Smith, who you mentioned – he's under contract for next year. Still, both those guys are lefties. You don't see them in there every day against left-handed pitching. Cameron Maben just came back from the suspended list. He needs to get his at-bats. They brought up Reimer Liriano, a young kid they're very excited about. He scuffled a little bit, not unlike a lot of young players that they bring up, but they want to give him adequate at-bats so they could sort of see what they have from a developmental standpoint moving forward. This Abraham Almonte, who hit a home run last night, they got him from the Mariners. You know, they kind of want to judge what they have there. So it's kind of it's a tough spot there too, especially in the National League. You don't have the benefit of the designated hitter. You're trying to evaluate these guys and squeeze them in there and mix and match a little bit. Really, you look at this Padre lineup from a position player standpoint, you have a whole lot of platoon guys, really, the way it works out. And that's no knock on the roster, really. It's just the way it kind of sets up. And, you know, one of the knocks that Buddy Black gets, at least from the fan base here, and I don't think it's fair, is that, you know, well, the lineup looks so different from night to night. Well, you know, by and large, it has to. I think you have to mix and match a little bit depending on the pitching matchups and who's going hot at a certain point. And like I said, I just think the composition of the roster at this point and what the Padres have lends itself to just a lot of change, a lot of lineup in flux from night to night. So, yeah, it's a lot of guys are going to get a chance to play, and a few guys are going to have to come off the bench and contribute late in games. And at least the National League, you get a chance to use your bench a little bit more. So the guys who don't start are likely going to get a chance to pinch hit late in games.
Well, it's a transitional time for the Padres, and it's kind of a clean slate with everybody auditioning for a new general manager in A.J. Preller, and he seems to have his work cut out for him. So we will keep our eye on this, and we will be catching up with you next week. Thanks, Corey. I will soon be joined by my intrepid colleague, Steve Gilbert, who covers the Arizona Diamondbacks for MLB.com. And as we get into what's going on with those feisty Diamondbacks, they're at the point in the season where they are hoping to play spoiler for all of those contenders, well, the two contenders in their division. But I'm going to want to talk a little bit about infielders and bobbleheads. So let's bring in Steve. We'll start off with the infield situation. I was reading some of your coverage, and Aaron Hill possibly moving to third base next year. I know some people have been talking about it, and they're remaining a little bit coy on what they ultimately want to do. But why would they move him to third? What's the situation, the logjam situation going on there?
Yeah, Allison, they just have so many middle infielders, whether it's Aaron Hill, Didi Gregorius, Chris Owings, Nick Ahmed. They've got several different options at the second base and shortstop spot. Now at third base, they've got Jake Lamb, who's a rookie that they like. But they thought, why not see about moving Aaron Hill to third, or at least have him play over there a little bit to see if he could do it as a possible alignment for next year, in case they want to put Chris Owings at second base, and leave Didi Gregorius at short. Plus, they also have Cliff Pennington. So if Aaron Hill could play another position, that would certainly help them be able to get his bat in the lineup. And it's kind of a philosophy that Tony La Russa has kind of brought to the organization. They've got one of their top prospects, Brandon Drury, who's a really good third baseman, and he's at the Double-A Mobile right now. They've got him taking some reps over at second, not necessarily because he's going to play there permanently, but again, La Russa likes to have flexible pieces on a big league roster, and so if Brandon Drury is able to add second base to his repertoire, that certainly could make him more valuable going forward, just like if Aaron Hill can play third base, that might be make him more valuable next season.
So is that something that I guess they kind of tossed around in the offseason, they discuss it thoroughly, and then they just sort of see how these guys play at spring training?
Yeah, I think that's really the way they're leaning. I think Chris Owings was the guy they picked at shortstop coming out of spring training over Didi Gregorius. But Owings has missed a few months now due to an injured shoulder. So Gregorius has got more playing time, and they've really liked, again, what they've seen from him defensively. And so, if Owings can slide over to second base, now they've got a really good defensive combination up the middle. And then if Aaron Hill can play third and provide, some power out of the third base spot, that could give them some options going forward if say, Jake Lamb needs another year of seasoning or doesn't pan out quite the way they want him to.
So we're less than a week away from September 1st, so everyone's kind of talking about which prospect might get called up. It's an interesting dynamic because even though there's some players for every team that the fans are excited about and want to see brought up, roster management often plays into this whole thing. And if a guy does not have to be added onto 40-man this offseason to protect him at the Rule 5 draft, then he's probably not going to see a call-up in September. So reading some of your coverage, I mean, Archie Bradley probably is not going to be a September call-up. But who are some of the candidates we could see come up for the Diamondbacks next week?
Yeah, that's, that's a good point, Allison. A lot of people were kind of hoping to see Archie Bradley, who, you know, was a candidate to make the rotation out of spring training, and going into spring training was ranked as the number one pitching prospect by our colleagues at MLB.com. But he's going to pitch in a fall league, so I guess Arizona fans will get a chance to see him just in the fall league as opposed to the big league roster. You know, I was talking with Kevin Towers about who might be coming up, and a lot of the guys that would normally be coming up as September call-ups are already up, like a Jake Lamb or, you know, a Chase Anderson. So I think we're more going to see guys get healthy and come up, guys that are on rehab assignments like a Chris Owings and A.J. Pollock getting ready to start a rehab assignment. So we could see him too. Andrew Chafin's a left-handed pitcher. He could get some starts in September. He's a guy that might call up, maybe a Jake Barrett. Again, so many guys they have up here right now already, and they're trying to find, you know, innings for them or at bat for them, that they're going to, you know, not call up too many people when it comes to September call-ups this year.
So on a completely different note, much lighter note, I was looking through some of the promotional stuff coming up for the Diamondbacks. I'm a big Bob Brenly fan. Just a really great guy, good broadcaster, obviously managed the Diamondbacks to their World Series title in 2001. So they're having a Brenly bobblehead night. And I love this bobblehead because he's wearing a jersey with blue jeans, and he has a baseball in one hand and a microphone in the other. Have you seen this?
I have seen it, yes. It's their alumni weekend this weekend where they're going to have their annual alumni game, and they're going to honor Bob. And let's be honest, Allison, I think one of the things you really like about Bob is that he's from the state of Ohio. Am I correct?
I believe he is, but I hadn't even thought about that. But it's another feather in his cap.
Yes.
I was looking at the roster for this alumni game. What'd you say?
I said it is very unique because he's been a broadcaster and he's been a manager for him, so they were trying to debate, do we have him in uniform, do we have him as a broadcaster, and so I guess it just kind of split the difference and made him a little bit of everything.
I think it's fantastic. I mean, the Diamondbacks have, I give them a lot of credit. They have a really creative approach to just about everything they do. I love the roster of some of these alumni that are coming back, that names that you just forgot existed. I mean, not that they aren't awesome guys, but David DeLucci, Mike Fetters, Steve Finley, of course Gonzo, who works for the team, Mike Hampton, Reggie Sanders, Greg Swindell. So this is, it's fun from a fan standpoint. I mean, everybody loves, like, when the old timers come back. It's kind of it's like a fail-safe activity that everybody can kind of get into.
And what's kind of interesting about the Diamondbacks is they don't have that long a history, only going back to 98. So it's really only been in the last few years when they've been able to do some of the alumni stuff that maybe other teams have been doing for years. And it's amazing to see the fans, how excited they get about seeing some of these guys, particularly, of course, the guys from the 2001 World Series team that will always be remembered here. But even other guys, some of those guys you mentioned, like David DeLucci, was always a fan favorite. He's a guy that always gets attention when he comes back. And, you know, like you said, Gonzo works for the organization, so he's always around. I always joke with him because every time I turn around, he's signing autographs, and I just find it hard to believe that as many autographs as he's signed over the last, you know, 16 years, that there's still somebody in the state of Arizona that doesn't have at least three of his autographs. But, yeah, so it's going to be a fun weekend, and then they're going to wear the throwback jerseys. And it's funny to have a throwback jersey when your franchise is only, you know, 15, 16 years old. But, The players have really gotten into, like, wearing the purple, and they kind of like breaking out the purple pinstripes or whichever jersey they choose to wear in a given year.
Well, I'm going to try to get my hands on a Brenly bobblehead just for my very small collection. I think it's pretty cool. But anyway, Steve, thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week. I will soon be joined by my colleague Thomas Harding, who covers the Rockies for MLB.com. And we are at that point in the season, which we've been at that point for a while now with the Rockies because they're not in contention, and it's been a disappointing year. We're looking toward next year, but I have made a resolution that my entire conversation with Thomas Harding is not going to involve any injury news. We are not going to discuss any pulled hamstrings, any sore shoulders, any broken fingers from now until about 10 minutes from now. So let's bring in T. Harding. Thomas, I've been reading a lot of your coverage, and I want to talk about the closer situation heading into 2015 because there seems to be some options. So we have a young pitcher named Adam Ottavino,
yes.
who started off appearing in like many, many Rockies games to start off the season, and he was really good. And then he was really bad for a month, and then he kind of made some adjustments. So let's talk about him a little bit and what he's done to sort of get back on track and what his prospects are for next season.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this is a guy who has developed really over the last couple of years here. He was a starter in the St. Louis organization, a former second-round pick. Ended up that it looked like he was going to be a reliever, and he was traded to the Rockies. Has a very good slider and has really developed his fastball. That was the question. Could he develop a fastball to keep people off his slider? The fastball looks very good. He's throwing 97, 98 miles an hour this late in the year when he really was about 2 or 3 miles an hour less earlier in the year. And he's turned out to be a very good arm for them.
So, I mean, he had to kind of like reinvent himself a little bit, which is good. But there's confidence has a lot to do with that, right? So when things start working for you, I mean, did he have to be talked into anything as far as like not relying too much on his slider and working out throwing the fastball more for strikes? Was this an easy teaching moment for the Rockies?
Well, I thought that actually started to happen last year. A couple of years ago, it was clear that he really didn't have the fastball command to be a guy that you would pitch in important innings. Last year, you started to see it come around, and this year, that's been the biggest thing with him. And even if you go back and you look at the time that he struggled for about a month, he struggled by leaving pitches over the plate. The fastball was not as sharp as it was. But where he didn't struggle was with walks. And if you aren't walking people, you've got a chance to fix things. So he was able to improve the fastball, which kept people off of his slider. And really lately, I think he's pitched very well for this team.
Okay, so now let's look ahead a little bit to next year. Of course, we can look into our crystal ball, and it's just all fuzzy because we have absolutely no idea how this whole thing is going to shake out. But LaTroy Hawkins, there's a club option for him, and he's obviously been a reliable, you know, end-of-game kind of guy. That would create kind of an uncertain situation, I guess, going into next year. But if he had to handicap it, I mean, how do you see maybe this? What are the possibilities, the different scenarios as far as the shaking out next season?
I would think that it would shake out the way they planned it to shake out this season, only the difference being that going into this season, they thought that Rex Brothers, the hard-throwing left-hander, would eventually become the closer for this team, and they could slide him into the spot after LaTroy Hawkins maybe began the year there, and then LaTroy Hawkins could have slid back into his traditional setup role. That didn't happen because Rex Brothers has had just an awful year. I mean, an ERA somewhere close to 6 after being somewhere below 2 last season. But is Adam Ottavino, he has the guy. I mean, he has the closer-type stuff. You see the slider, you see the fastball. Can he slide into that closer role eventually during next season? That's what I'm seeing right now. But maybe if they re-sign LaTroy Hawkins to begin with, then it seems like they really want to do that because they like his arm, they like his leadership ability with the younger guys. Then what you do is you begin the season with LaTroy Hawkins in the closer role, and once you really get Adam Ottavino going and you're sure that he's your closer, then you go ahead and segue him into that spot.
So this has been obviously a season that everyone will probably want to forget as soon as the last out is made. But there are some bright spots. And at third base, Nolan Arenado, so recently named nationally player of the week, and with just ridiculous numbers for that week. Okay, small sampling, but you know, 545 average, 600 on base percentage, 12 for 22. So this has to be a nice little feather in the cap of the Rockies when they're sort of grasping for things to look at and optimism for next year. So he's been a very bright spot.
The thing about him was when he was in the minor leagues, everyone talked about his bat being ahead of his glove. And so he gets here, he wins the Gold Glove, and he's on the highlight reels all the time. And now the bat is starting to catch up. And one of the things that I think has helped him is, I know we're going to talk about it, but the injuries throughout the lineup, they've allowed him to bat in the third and fourth positions and be able to work with guys on base for them. And I think that's made a huge difference. This was something that when he was drafted in the second round back in 2009 out of high school, they thought that he would be an offensive force. He's getting there. I see a little bit more power in the future. I see the doubles coming, and as long as he hits doubles, then a few of those will go out, and he'll have decent home run totals, especially playing at Coors Field. He's a guy to look forward to in the future, and not just because of his bat and glove, but he kind of carries a presence and enthusiasm there that I think actually will make him one of those guys that other guys on this team feed off of.
Well, it'll be fun to watch him as he progresses, and something to look forward to next year. So, Thomas, thank you, and we will be talking to you very soon. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.